you coming back in here with dirty jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
Look at anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
What's the crack? How's it going? Welcome to the Three Men Weave the Balls at the EGA podcast. The sun is shining. Galway playing Mayo tomorrow. Cabin are on the verge of being knocked out of the championship. Where would you rather be? Mac Brady, how are you?
I was alright until you had to throw shade at me for absolutely no reason there, Morris.
Welcome back. You had a week long absence there.
Thanks very much. Yeah, went a bit at it awful and very hard after winning the Division 2 Reserve League final on Sunday.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
And Mick McCarthy, how are you?
I was fine until not only did you besmirch Mark, but you besmirched me by not even bringing up the fact that my county are also in a knockout football championship game this weekend. Because, sure, who cares about them? At least Cavan are worthy of talking about. Worthy of snagging.
I think Clare have a massive chance.
As do I. What?
That's live on RTE. Yeah, that's unusual for the Clare footballers.
It's unusual for football.
First time. I think since they played Mayo. About three
Jinx.
Years ago, yeah.
Jinx.
They played about 3 years ago that they've been on TV. I've listened to them a lot on the radio over the last few years. So I'll kind of miss that, I think. There's an element of that I have imaginations for a lot of these players. Like, I see them on the Sunday game and stuff like that, but I try and almost block that from my memory and just kind of like, I see this, like, Gary Brennan as this towering 8-foot-tall figure who, you know, can get from the 45 to the 21 with two strides.
Funny you should say that. I was we played Galway against Mayo on PlayStation 2 this week as a preview of the match this weekend, and I haven't managed to see really much of either team. I've seen a couple of halves of football of them so far this year in the championship, and I had misremembered so many of the players. I remember Donny Vaughan as a red-haired lad. Turns out he's completely bald, as is Damien Comer, just head shaved altogether. Didn't realise that at all.
This is the usual PlayStation 2 wander off part of the podcast, I think, that we've experienced.
Check
lately.
It out on Facebook. And
it is without a doubt our favourite part of the week, though.
Yep.
Yeah. Playing I didn't get to play this week.
We'll chat about all those games, not the PlayStation games, the real games, later on in the show. But a couple of pieces of news to get over first. The first one is just go back to last week and the Wexford Kilkenny game. And Derek McGrath caught him. So I was watching this game firstly on Sunday, right? And I wasn't at it. I was in the office watching it. And I said a couple of times to Gary, why Mark Fanning, every time before he took a puck out, or increasingly before he took a puck out, was looking back over his shoulder. And I remember thinking at the time, who is he looking at? Like, I glanced back over his shoulder and then he'd do something. And then on Tuesday, Derek McGrath caught him in the Irish Independent. He made an interesting point. So he said, early on in the game, I noticed Mark Fanning conversing with someone behind his goal at the Davin end, at the Davin stand end. It was intriguing to watch this member of Davies' backroom team perched right in the front row, 5 yards from Fanning's goal, clearly instructing Fanning read the puck out policy. Obviously wired to Saoirse Bufflin, who we spoke about with John Connell at the weekend, the former Clare goalkeeping coach, with the lead direction coming from Davy himself. The early instruction to go long clearly paid dividends. I monitored this individual's progress at halftime as he somehow made his way to the right behind the goal at the hill, and the guidance stewardly continued. So when you take your seat in the semi-final in Saturday 2 weeks, watch out for this. So I watched this game back, and sure enough, there's a man in the front row in the Davin stand over to the right. So he's got a terrible view because he's actually sitting behind like the mini gate.
Yeah.
But he's in a perfect position to communicate with Mark Fanning where to put their puck out. And then in the second half, sure enough, there he is, the front row of the hill. So he'll see nothing. I mean, his view is totally obstructed because he's literally up against the fence. But he's close enough to shout at Fanning, who's the goalkeeper, about their puck-out policy. And it's interesting, even though Wexford had less puck-outs than Kenny did, their percentage was the same. They won as many puck-outs as Kenny did. So their success clearly pays off. And we've seen before how much Davey invests in his puck-outs with the bunching and the policy and stuff. And this is obviously just the next step. It's a way of communicating with his goalkeeper through his sideline by having somebody sitting basically as a fan but communicating with his keeper.
So you're saying his view is bad. So somebody is he's getting the information from somewhere else.
Yeah, so when I checked,
definitely raises ethical questions as to getting an unfair advantage.
So I checked,
wait till Frank Lampard finds out about this. He's going to be disgusted.
So when I watched it back, Davey actually wasn't.
Maybe Frank Lampard was right and you just support the other team. Do you ever think of that?
Ah, screw him. Sorry, go on, Morris.
Sorry. When I watched it back, Davey wasn't wearing a headset, but Saoirse Bufflin was.
Yes.
And so it's who you're thinking, who's he talking to? And it's pretty obvious that he's talking to the man behind the goal. What I want to do when I get the time to it is to watch back the other Wexford games to see, has this been a tactic all year? And is Derek McGrath the first person to just notice it? But I think it's genius. I mean, I can understand why there's reservations about him. But I mean, is it that much of a stretch?
Yeah, it is absolutely unfair. Like, so I don't know if it's illegal or not. Like, we can look into that or whatever. But you're saying that Mark Fanning has communication from a different angle. So that a goalkeeper needs to see the pitch for the way he can see it and make decisions as to where to hit the ball. And even if you've a coach shouting at him, which I don't think is allowed anymore, you know, they're seeing that from the same angle as well. But you're saying now that there's actually communication from a different vantage point.
Yeah.
To tell them where to go with the ball. It's an unfair advantage. Of course it is.
But yeah, is it unfair if it's not illegal though? From my mind, it's
I'd imagine there's definitely some kind of, like, if there isn't a law against it, it's a law of omission. It's a crime. What's the word? Sin of omission. Because they would never have thought of this. You know, like, it's not as if they say, oh, well, it's fine, you can communicate with anybody in the ground and they can tell the goalkeeper what to do. And then that person could have two tickets for the match and can sit wherever they want.
Yeah.
How is he even getting around the ground?
That's what I want
Did
to
he
know.
Have those two exact tickets?
Did he leave at half time from the Davin stand and run
around the canal? Yeah.
To get up to Hill and get in that in for the second half and then get down to the very front row?
Like, regardless of the ethics of it, whether it's right or wrong, I think there needs to be... Why are you shaking your head at me? Already?
Because the ethics of it are important.
Yeah, but not the point I'm about to make. You're angry at me already and I haven't even spoken yet. There should be a documentary on GA endline skullduggery. Because there's so much behind the goals,
yeah,
in Gaelic football and hurling, that we definitely need to do a profile of all the different things. Like, you've got lads from your team trying to feed the ball to the goalkeeper so they can take quick kick outs. Then at the opposition end, they're trying to throw an extra ball out onto the field so the other goalkeeper can't take quick kick outs. There must be so much going on that you'd love. Like, I always wonder what you'll always see forwards and defenders in talking away into the umpire's ear the whole time on about stuff. Like, it would be a brilliant fly on the wall series if you just said, here's even just one game or two games of a weekend, or here's everything that went on at the end line and behind the goals.
And even
also goalkeepers with their tees now as well, trying to leave the tee out so they can take a quick kick out. The opposition forwards trying to throw
it away.
Back.
Yeah.
Throw it away.
You've got, wasn't it Fermanagh who had Gallagher's brother beside the goals for the league final last year, feeding him instruction and the ball. Cluxton used to have his famous ball boy who'd fire a ball quickly. Like, I think this is just an evolution of that stuff. But at the same time,
rid of that because it wasn't fair.
Yeah, that's
so
right. Yeah,
now
yeah,
you're just trying to get around that. Like, obviously, whatever about legality, it's unethical for sure. For, like, without a doubt, it's trying to get an unfair advantage.
He gets away with it.
I don't think anybody in Wexford's going to give a shit about that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, whatever. Yeah. But let's call it what it is. Like,
speaking of ethical
cheating.
This isn't cheating. This next example isn't cheating, but...
What?
We're moving on, Mick. So, during the week, there was an article in the Irish News. I saw this headline and I couldn't wait to see who was it. I was about to list off former Armagh players there and get myself into libel trouble. The headline was, "Time to get rid of Kieran McGeaney," says former Armagh player. Straight away, obviously, that's going to catch a lot of people's attention. Then you go to read it, and the Armagh player is anonymous. So he doesn't want to give his name. But this former Armagh star is basically, as outlined...
That's the worst. You've been telling bad jokes all week, and that's the worst one you've told. Apologies, Maris.
The only thing was going to have that was, if he really was a true GA, a true Gael, they wouldn't have listed him as anonymous. They'd have listed him as another.
Yeah. I'm the only one who found that joke funny. This basically goes through a list of grievances that it has with McGeaney. Interestingly, it refers to him as Geezer throughout the letter. The letter is totally anonymous. Some of the criticism is very, very weird. So it starts off to say that it can be hard to put your finger on what exactly has gone wrong, but one thing is clear: his time has run out. At the time of his employment, Manny thought Geezer would use the opportunity to bring in a new backroom team. He didn't. It seems he's a seriously loyal man, but his tenor shows he's been loyal to a fault. It goes on to outline stuff about his post-match interview, criticizes him for citing the fact that their county is finally in the black financially, which, if anything, is a good thing, the fact that he's conscious of that. Anyway, all of that.
So why does it criticize him for that?
So I suppose
as if he's making excuses.
I better read out that point, right?
This is just farcical. I read this as well.
The penalty finally dropped with me when in the Sky interview, Geezer said the county board are in the black now, and he went on to talk about a failed development structure, which has only recently undergone a restructuring. When have you ever heard a manager talking about the county finances as if it was a priority for them? That statement epitomises what has been Geezer's strength within his time. His strengths have been in the role of football director, not as a senior manager, when he's involved in restructuring the county board, development squads and finances, so on. His one glaring omission has been a lack of absolute focus on the senior team, which I feel should have been his only priority. I would just add there, right? Jimmy Guinness.
Are you sure this wasn't Martin O'Neill who said Giovanni Trapattoni was? No, that was the criticism of them. Maybe not Martin, but Trapattoni.
Then it goes on to say, time to be ruthless and to make a change at the top. The capable is winning properly if they're properly guided. I want Armagh to be successful in 2020, not to be more of the same. I have so many issues with this. Yeah. The first one, right, is this player is using his reputation. The fact that this letter wouldn't have been published if it was a fan. So the fact that he is a former Armagh player is the key point to this letter. To be anonymous, to shout this stuff anonymously, if you're using your reputation to give yourself a platform, but then high point a cloak of anonymity. Like, it's just like these morons on Twitter, these eggs who are so happy to be again anonymous and shout criticism as if they give some sort of weight that you can't find out who they are or respond back. Like, if you're not going to be willing, if you're going to throw stuff like this and not be willing to take it back by putting anonymous, I don't think you should be given that platform, to be honest. Secondly, then, the stuff about, there's a load of different issues, but one of his points is he talks about being in the stand, and so again, it was only when us supporters were roaring onto the pitch that he reluctantly dropped them. He's talking about players there. Us supporters roaring onto the pitch. So you're going to use your voice at the pitch to abuse a manager, and then you're going to go and criticise them in a thing. And again, you're doing all this anonymously without putting yourself in the block. I have a massive issue with that. And then finally, to criticise McGeaney and not put in the context of what he actually has achieved. Like, we spoke about this last week, about going beyond like reading results or cherry picking results straight out of it, like how he has developed as a team, the style he's played. They're an unbelievably enjoyable team to watch. The players absolutely adore him. There's a lot to be said for that as well. Same context of David Fitzgerald. I think this is really poor.
Yeah, like it's also just very badly timed. Like, there was an argument that McGeaney, maybe it was time to go for McGeaney with Armagh on the surface with the success in senior team. Every year he's been in charge of them, and this is probably the first year that hasn't.
Signs of development.
I completely agree. There were some parts of that when you're reading out the problems that he has that are farcical and complete and utter mistruths. Like, it sounds to me like somebody, and I genuinely have no idea who this is. I don't even have an idea. But it sounds to me like if it's a former Armagh player, it's somebody who would like a job with a young team that are coming through and are primed for success.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe get rid of McGeaney because this is what's going to happen. The fact of the matter is that Armagh haven't had the players for the last 10 years, you know, and we literally only talked about this on Monday
yeah.
about how he has developed surprisingly. Like, you know, that last year seemed like the natural time. It was the end of a kind of a cycle, and it seemed like the natural time for him to go. And instead, he stayed with it. And they've brought in like five players, three of whom are already national figures in this year alone. And they look like they're ready to take that step up, and they're very close. They lose to Mayo by a point. They could easily go and challenge for an Ulster title next year. I would imagine they'll be, you know, at least within a huge shout of getting into the Super 8s next year, and then they kick on from there. And it's like, he's literally designed this to happen the way it's happening at the moment, and then it just seems like such a weird time to kind of come out with this crap. Like,
and even all those points you make are worthwhile, and I obviously have a bigger issue with the thing. But if you were to boil down to those specifics that you mentioned, every single one of those points is counterable. Like, the fact that, given out about him talking about referee after the game, he was specific. Like, he outlined the issue with timekeeping, something we all agree on. It wasn't an excuse. It was him outlining one specific thing. This thing about him being too loyal. Can you think of one Armagh player, like high profile player, who hasn't been dropped over the couple of weeks? If anything, he hasn't been loyal enough. Like, we talk about players
dropped
like
Rory Grugan, the captain.
James Morgan, who came back out. Stephen Sheridan, he dropped last year. Jamie Clark, there was all that stuff there as well. He brought in Rian O'Neill totally out of the blue and entrusted him this year. Like, he's been adventurous as a manager. That's something to be praised. Like, there's a load of different criticisms you can have of that, but
the bigger issue is what you're saying, though, is like, you know, if you're going to come out and do this, you know, put your name on the block and put yourself out there.
Exactly, yeah. Right, on Monday's show, we condense the tier township discussion to just a 30-second whinge, but Mark is back and he wants to develop it further.
Oh, hang on for a cup of tea.
No, no, hold on now. I just want to play with... This is, you know, it's Quizzy Friday. We do our Guess the Handicap Quizzy quiz Friday. On Fridays. I've got another quick quiz for you here. Just it accidentally happened in the office during the week when you weren't around. I want to talk about the Tommy Murphy Cup. We all remember the Tommy Murphy Cup.
Okay. Remember it well.
Which is basically what they're kind of bringing back with the proposals they have for the tiered championships right now. And how well do you remember the Tommy Murphy Cup is what I want to know. So I've got two questions for you. One is multiple answers. The first one is just one straight answer.
Right.
How long did the Tommy Murphy Cup run for?
4 years.
I'd say...
3 years.
Yeah, less. Three.
The Tommy Murphy Cup had five different editions. 5 years it ran for. I couldn't believe it.
I think it was only one or two that were where the Division 2-4 teams weren't in the actual championship, so wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it changed after it five. That you're like
five.
If I couldn't remember how long it ran for, I'm not gonna be able to remember the
Fair point, Mark. Yeah.
So then my next question was: can you name the five teams that won the Tommy Murphy Cup?
Wicklow.
Yes.
I remember them beating Antrim, I think, in the final. Mick O'Dwyer getting more silverware.
Sligo?
Yes. Antrim? No, sorry, Sligo didn't win it. Sligo Antrim. Lost it.
Antrim won one and lost one, I think.
Antrim won one, lost one.
So Wicklow, Antrim. Offaly?
No. No, never come in with Asses Roar of it.
It wasn't, definitely wasn't Leitrim. Who else would it be? Louth?
Louth won. They beat Leitrim 3-14 to 1-11 in the final after you've like a serious shade there been thrown at that Leitrim there. For, definitely.
I just knew they didn't win a trophy in Croke Park other than the league title.
So you don't have the first two. The two most exciting ones, 2004 and 2005.
Are they bigger counties than you'd expect?
Well, like you...
2004?
I'm just going to give them to you because...
Carlow.
You don't have... No.
Clare.
No, yes, Clare.
Oh, Clare did win one,
I wanted to try.
One of the great days.
I've given Mick so much rope there to hang himself. I'm like, get there. I didn't want to say anything. Yes, Clare beat Sligo, Limerick. The very first one. And no, Tipperary beat Wexford, 3-10 to 15 points. But I think that kind of shows you, when you can't remember how many years of it was, and you can't remember even half the people who won it.
I literally only really remember Wicklow beating Antrim because it was a big Mick O'Dwyer moment. And, you know, he was bigger than the Tommy Murphy Cup on his own. Like,
yeah, my memory of it was that it ran for 2 years. Wicklow won it once and Antrim won it once.
And people called it the Tommy Cooper Cup.
Yep. But anyway, we move on. I think that says a lot about the idea of Division 3 and 4 teams getting into a championship after they get knocked out of the first one.
Defending champion here is Mick.
Oh, yeah.
I lost my belt last week and Mark, you're going to take him on.
And guess the handicaps.
Yeah.
I notice nobody has any notes here, so let's keep an eye on the score.
I don't need notes. Morris will do the...
I'll do the heavy taking.
Yeah. Although Morris, I never trust.
I normally keep
anytime
the score.
Anytime I listen to Morris, one of them, he'll forget who's going first. He'll forget what the score is. You make sure now and do this proper.
It's ad hoc.
We'll bring in an independent adjudicator.
Yep. We'll get a...
Stokes, Carrie Crowley.
Manuela. FIFA. No, that wasn't Manuela. What was her name? Oh, fuck.
Tyrone Cavan, Mark.
It was Monique.
Monique.
From Italian 90.
Yeah.
You're up first here.
Tyrone Cavan.
Are you optimistic?
This is... I am. I think there is a brilliant opportunity here for Cavan to go out and beat Tyrone. We need to. We haven't beaten them in nearly 40 years in the championship. We've come... on the face of it, we haven't come close. And I'm going to list off a few games here and you're probably going to laugh at me and I'll be, but this and but that. But I think it does actually kind of lend a bit of credence to the idea that Cavan are in with a shout here. Like the last few years, we played them in 2016 in the championship, went to a replay. That first 20 minutes of that replay was a brilliant game. I think we were going nearly point for point. I think it was 5 points apiece or 6 points apiece. And then the Irish completely fell out of our trousers. And Tyrone ran in a load of goals and they ended up winning 5-17 to 3-something or other. It was the first game ever to have over 40 scores in Ulster. Then we played them in the league the following year. 8 points up at halftime. Again, fell us under and ended up losing to them. Then we played them in the championship last year, when we were about, we had a system that was about as useful as a chocolate teapot. We went in with no hope. I actually, Jim McGuinness had some brilliant analysis before the game. He was on Sky Sports, and usually, as Paul Fitzpatrick pointed out here a few weeks ago, when it comes to analysis, you know, with a preview of a Cavan game, it's, you mentioned the underage success they've had, and you know, it'll be interesting to see if they can push on really with that. You mentioned the fact that they've got a good defensive system, and you mentioned maybe that they've got a proud history. But McGuinness pulled no punches. He actually, he tore them apart, really. He was like, they've got such success over the last few years. When is this, like, why is this, why are they not pushing on and getting to provincial finals? And he accused them of having no heart against Donegal in the first round of the Ulster Championship last year. And then, to be fair, Peter Canavan then kind of countered that, saying, well, against Down, they showed plenty of fight, plenty of gumption. And then McGuinness, actually, I think we can play it now, what he responded with.
Down or not Tyrone, with all respect, and I think there is a psychological barrier with Cavan. You know, and Donegal are not down either, and Cavan have to, they have to take a big gun down, and absolutely, that hasn't happened. Absolutely. And with all the players we're speaking about, they're yo-yoing between Division 1 and Division 2 when they should be, you know, really pushing in Division 1 consistently and beating the likes of Tyrone. And we're all in this room tonight, and there's an expectation that Tyrone will win by 6 or 7 points. And now, if that expectation's in the room, it's coming from somewhere, and I think it's just time for them to stand up and be men.
So, like, they were, it was almost like a sort of harsh awakening for, you know, like a harsh message to give, but he ended up in right. Cavan, like, we played well enough, ended up, Tyrone were always in control of that game. I think we lost by five maybe in the end, 5 or 6, but it was that thing that Tyrone, I think, went well ahead and just kept Cavan at arm's length. But if you contrast that to what Mickey Graham was saying ahead of the Donegal game, or ahead of the Ulster Championship this year, where he said that Donegal game was like a challenge match last year, that there wasn't that same fight, and that whatever Cavan team, or whatever we were going to expect from Cavan this year, that they were going to come fighting into every game. And I think that, again, in the league this year, we went up against Tyrone in Healy Park, was getting really strong wind, we're 4 or 5 points down at half time, but was a really good display in the first half. It was one of those wins where, like, if you're 4 or 5 down, you're thinking, right, we're going to kick on here and win this game. Killian Clark had sent off, I think, about a minute and a half into the second half, and that was the end of it. But I think what McGuinness was talking about there is something that Graham has brought to the team this year, that there will be, I think they are going to be hopping off the wall coming out to play Tyrone.
Why weren't they last day, though?
The last day, again,
do you know what I mean? I feel in the last against Donegal, I feel like you're taking a narrative that's been built that's not based on reality. So they got the win over a semi-big gun in Monaghan that, you know, McGuinness is talking about there. And I say semi because Monaghan weren't there this year. They weren't at the races, as proved by what happened in later games, right? But, you know, and then you'd be expected to beat Armagh. And then when they had that chance against Donegal, Donegal and Tyrone, the two teams that he's talking about having to go up there, they didn't show up for the first half of the match. Yeah, you know, and we talked about it here that they weren't even themselves in the warm-up. They didn't come out hopping off the walls.
Yeah, but I think that was, like, that was more down to maybe the occasion, you know, the Ulster final.
It's all the same thing, yeah, though.
But no, comparing it to last year, what I'm saying is more, last year was a little bit rudderless in that we changed tack just before that Down game, completely changed our game plan back to this mass defence. It was one of those things as well, I think, that the Ulster Championship, there was such an emphasis always placed, and it's not getting back to an Ulster final, that the qualifiers never really sparked the same flames, right, in that. You could see after the great run they got to the quarter final that every other year since, it would just kind of peter out in the qualifiers. Whereas I think this year, like, right, they might go out and they could be nervous again and misplaced passes or whatever they did in the Ulster final. But I think going into the Tyrone game, comparing this year's Tyrone game again compared to last year, I think they have, won the right sort of mental attitude going into it. Like I was saying, with Graham, will have them geared up for this, believing that they can really win it. And secondly, they will have the actual tools to go and win it if the opportunity arises, that they can, if Tyrone, you know, it might need Tyrone to have a bit of an off day. Like, the other thing is, as you were saying, why didn't it happen against Donegal? Donegal are a really good team.
Absolutely,
Tyrone are a really,
yeah,
good team.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that's what I mean, isn't that it's not going to be as, when we begin to talk about, oh, we just kind of expect, you know, Tyrone to win with 6 or 7 points, and that it was going to be a bit of a non-event. I really don't think that this weekend is going to be a non-event. Tyrone might still win it, but I think it's going to be, if they do, they're going to have to come through a hell of a battle.
Yeah.
And just the final point on that, the importance of that, I think, was epitomised by the Kildare game. Like, we all watched that game, and I think it was noticeable how poor Kildare were in terms of like their intensity or their pressure on the tackle. John Dively actually wrote in his column this week that when he looked up the stats for this game, in the first half, Kildare registered one proper tackle against Tyrone. One proper tackle in 37 minutes of football. So any way surprised that... And it looked in that game like Brendan Cassidy Burns had the run of the park. Like the head laying a glove on them. And I think that whatever about their... because of the ceiling that's on this Tyrone team, the way they play, the fact that you need to match... I think oftentimes the way that this Tyrone team... are being teams is because they're more physical, they're more better conditioned. Like you have to be hopping off them really if you want to challenge them. And that's where I think for Cavan it's going to be so important as well. Final, just a one word answer I want from you here, Mark. Will the Cavan set up the way they set up in the first half against Donegal by playing backs and corner forward and bringing them back, or the second half?
I think they'll set up for the first half. I think if Tyrone get a run on you, good luck. I think they need to stay in the game for as long
stay
as they
cagey,
can.
Yeah, okay.
Just one last thing on it. I do think, just to answer mixed things as well, that Tyrone, Cavan match up to Tyrone better than the match up to Donegal.
Fair point, yeah.
You have runners, so many runners in the Cavan team that can track all the Tyrone runners, and you've Paul McShane, it's going to be marked by Pádraig Faulkner. Killian Clark can take Matty Donnelly, and you're off to the races.
I think I just want to make a last point just on what I'm saying, though, is that I think what Cavan showed in the second half, and albeit it might have been against an 80% Donegal who probably thought that they had the game in hand, I think they showed that they're as good as that. So saying that Donegal are a good team or Tyrone are a good team, I think Cavan are also a good team, and I think that needs that. Again, I'm going back to what McGuinness is saying there, you know, about actually going up and believing in yourselves against these teams. And I just worry that they didn't do that against Donegal. And that might have been the occasion or whatever it was. Like, I completely agree with everything you're saying. I'm just saying we haven't seen it yet. For as much as you're saying it, I think that's more of a feeling that you have by the way that they're playing. I don't think we've seen it yet, them go out and play against Tyrone or Donegal, believing that they can win that game from the start. And that's what I hope to... That's what I want to see tomorrow, like, you know?
What's the spread, Mark?
Right. What is the spread?
So where is this match? Clonus.
It's in Clonus.
On
5 o'clock Saturday.
Saturday, yeah. Live on Sky Sports.
Cavan are Tyrone are minus... Like, minus five is too harsh. Minus three is probably more likely, but it might be a wee bit too... That might be me with my Cavan blinkers on. I'm going to say minus four.
Well, okay. I think it's probably less than that. I have to, by the way, just bring up, as I'm going to have to say it week on week from now on, that I made the prediction at the start of the year that Tyrone were going to win the All-Ireland based on the pure fact that they have to beat Dublin in the final, given what's happened in the last previous two races for five in a row, where the previous team, Offaly in 82 and Tipperary in 2010, beat the team that they that were going for the five in a row, having lost the year before. So just want to keep that on the record, because there'll be a lot of that crap written now by, you know, so-called journalists the week before the All-Ireland final. But I just wanted on record that this so-called journalist has had this on record since May, I think. Tyrone will be favourites. I don't think they'll be minus four. I will go with minus three.
Minus four is bang on.
Wow.
2-0,
Mark
maybe.
Always gets the Cavan ones right.
Mayo Galway, lads. This is the game of the weekend, really. Or certainly from my book it is anyway. This is on the Gaelic grounds in Limerick. I'm going to this one. Mick, you're up first here. Before we get into that, right, we don't have a team yet, but I made a list before I came in here of the team that could potentially start this game. Can I just read
for
it
for which
quickly?
Team
for Galway, right? So potentially what could start for Galway is Lavelle, Kearns, John Andy, Silk, Malloy, Daly, and one of McDade, who's just back from Australia, Johnny Heaney or Bradshaw. A midfield three of Cook, Flynn or Duggan, so one of those two. Daly, Walsh, Brannigan as your half forward line, and then Ian Burke, Damien Comer and Anton Lee as your full forward line. So that team, not only is that an incredible team, it's also a really balanced team, that you've got a really hard working half forward line who can all finish extremely well. An unbelievably athletic half back line, similar thing, that middle eight, which is proven so crucial against Mayo. The balance in that team is absolutely perfect, and yet there's still massive question marks over Galway. I think this is an unbelievable test in terms of where exactly they're, because in terms of players, the tools at their disposal, they have it there.
So I'd say that's like, it's almost like a different team altogether compared to who started the championship.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't even mention like Gary O'Donnell, Farraher, who's definitely in the mix, Danny Cummins, who Kevin Walsh seems to have a liking for. We don't know what the story is with Conroy. Is he back in the mix as well? So any of them could be within the mix, and yet still there's this question mark over how Galway are going to set up and how they're going to play. Which
it's not going to be like that's your team. It's not Kevin Walsh's, and I'm like a broken record going on about that, so I'm not going to talk about it again. But he's not going to change overnight.
Yeah, and part of me thinks he doesn't need to change because they've proven so successful against Mayo.
I was about to say if there was anything he shouldn't nearly change it for, it's Mayo, because
they've beaten them four times in a row in the championship. Yeah,
I also fear that it might not be the best match of the weekend
because of that.
That like it's definitely the most obviously most intriguing, and it's got the most likely challenger for an All Ireland coming out of it. But at the same point, like just Meath and Clare would probably be a better spectacle.
And even if it like again, just to harp on to, so Galway, we know how Galway are going to set up. Like that's the team. As I said, that's an incredible team. That team, it could be a close iteration of that team that start. There might be one or two changes. A lot of talk that young Sean Kelly might be playing fullback. He's played there against Monaghan in the league and against a friendly against Tipperary recently as well. So there's possibilities there in terms of what they do in that regard. Because you're going to have somebody like Cohn probably playing full forward. But if you look at the Mayo team, right? Mayo are definitely going to start with Kevin McLaughlin, Killian O'Connor probably has to start, Sean McDonough probably has to start, and Loftus. So those four are going to start. Then their question, and this is again going back to what Mayo, like how are Mayo going to counter against Galway, right? Galway, we know how Galway are going to set up. So Mayo can't, I don't think he can afford to play Doherty, Regan or Moran, because he needs a half.
I don't think Doherty's going to make it anyway.
Because we're not sure what his fitness Moran, is like. Yeah,
if Killian O'Connor is starting, Moran's probably going to have to make way for him.
Yeah, so I don't think
Killian can play 70 minutes after being out so long. Like, I wonder, do you bring him on at half time and hope you're still in the game?
McDonough and Loftus will start in their half forward line. The other player there is probably the question mark, because maybe that'll be Kevin McLaughlin, and then you'll have Conan O'Connor on the inside and one other player as well. I think that other player has to be, like, the ideal player is Dermot O'Connor, but somebody who's going to stick with Malloy or McDade or whoever it is, like, all the player in their half back line that's going to be. So, like, one of the most athletic players in the championship this year. So he needs to sacrifice. He can't play an attacker, the Mayo attacker
there.
Yeah,
he has to play a third midfielder, for want of a better word.
Because that's the way Mayo tried to go defensive against Galway last year with Rochford, and it didn't really work. And they've tried to play the way Mayo do, and that hasn't worked either. Like, I think they need to play the similar mirror Galway's, that half forward line. Like, you can't, there's no one in the country who will come close to Shane Walsh, Michael Daly and Eamon Brannigan in terms of, not like they're so athletic, but also their finishing power is incredible. And he doesn't have those players, but he needs to match them at the very least with somebody who can tag Galway's half back line. Like, you need somebody if Malloy is Kieran Malloy flying forward on top of those three, or even if it's McDade or Johnny Heaney, actually any of those, you need somebody who's going to match that in terms of going back the other way. And I don't think he can't put them, this thing about, oh, we'll put them on the back foot with an attacker, you can't do it with those players. Like, you can't put Kieran Malloy, you can try and put him on the back foot and he'll stay with you, and then he'll break the other way for a 7-yard run.
But also the way Galway set up, you can't really put them on the back foot because there's going to be someone there.
Yeah,
Malloy could just be like, here, you know, someone else take him there for a second, and just be marking space, goes only, and then be ready to counterattack. It'll also be interesting how they deal with Ian Burke, because James Horan was talking last year saying he was the best forward he thought in the country, I think he said at one stage last year. So he's obviously going to come in for special attention. And it'll be an interesting, because Mayo, usually they trust their one-on-one matchups. Do they just leave someone to man mark him, or do they give him, like he was cordled pretty well in
against Roscommon,
final. So
there is another thing as well, though. Shamey O'Shea played a full game for Breffy last weekend, you know, and if you bring him back in, I think they've missed him really badly, because I think that Aiden is, in a weird way, is wasted in midfield. Like, you know, as in they need him, I think. And if you put him to 11, suddenly that forward line just is...
And he's the guy to tag that.
I think I'd nearly leave. If you do bring him back in, possibly leave Aiden O'Shea in midfield and then have Donny Vaughan in the half-back line. Or Donny Vaughan
in half forward line,
Donny Vaughan in half forward line as that tracker.
Yeah,
on the light.
For all their injuries, like, you know, getting players like Vaughan, and I think especially Shamey O'Shea, I wouldn't rule out. I don't think he's been talked about as starting, but you know, he's one of those players experienced enough that you could just vault him back in, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it changes whatever way we do it, whether we drop Vaughan back or move Aiden forward. It changes them one way or another.
We'd be in the dressing rooms before the game deciding.
James, listen to me. I thought about this for a good 17 or 18 seconds, James.
This is the problem, right? The other question as well. This is the problem. Normally we do it, the great thing we're doing a Friday podcast is that we have the teams, and then Galway Mayo have scuppered us today by not announcing a team yet. But the other thing is we don't know if Damien Comer, there's this presumption.
I was literally about to bring up Comer that he's back as well.
There's this presumption that he's going to start. He's played, I'm so disappointed for him. I think this year was going to be, injuries happened, but in terms of the year he came off last year and the fact that he had Burke and Olai as outlets as well alongside him, to get injured, playing a five-a-side in December and miss out on an entire league, and then, there's this presumption he's going to start because he played 20 minutes of a club game, and then, you hear all kinds, I don't know if that's necessarily true. It's hard to know whether or not he will. We'll find out soon enough anyway. If he does, I think...
By the time this podcast is out, no doubt, this is...
The final interesting thing from this game, right, is Eamon Donoghue in the Irish Times did a great article on this, and he talked about... So Galway against Mayo have kept them to 6 points from play and only 12 points per match in those 7 games that they've beaten them in so far this year. But interestingly, Mayo, one of their biggest problems is that they've got don't have enough left-footed kickers in their team. So they've only kicked 30% of shots from their left side, and the same thing happened from the right side, coming back in onto the left foot that side. And the same thing happens with their frees. They've actually turned down a lot of scoreable frees from that side because they don't have enough left-footed kickers. And that's where you start to think, does that factor into his thinking, and then does Regan come in? But if he does, I think you still can't bring him in, on, as we mentioned earlier, on top of, I don't think Regan comes in as well as Cone and O'Connor. I think Regan has to come in instead of, because they still need that athletic tracker for that side. If you want to have that kind of, that's a really simple variation in your attack, but it's a massive one. If you can keep attacking on the same side, it becomes easy. And then similarly, if Mayo are attacking on the right side, you're a lot more inclined to foul them out there because they don't have a free taker, especially if Doherty isn't playing. They don't have a free taker from that side who'll kick it. Again, that's another team thing, and we're not going to find out about that until about an hour time.
What's the handicap, Mick?
Mayo minus one.
Mayo minus one. Jesus.
You were going to say Galway, were you?
Yeah, I don't think Mayo are favourites.
Mm.
Galway were in the Connacht final.
Were in the Connacht final because they beat Sligo, and then they fell apart to Roscommon worse than Mayo fell apart to Roscommon. Yeah. I think Mayo still have the pedigree at this stage of the year.
Jesus, I don't know.
They won't after this year. If they go out early 2 years in a row, yeah. I think that's...
It's very close. It could be no handicap. It's definitely not... It's either Mayo minus one or Galway minus one. So there's no point in me going Mayo minus two, because if it is Mayo minus... If it's Mayo favourites, it's Mayo minus one. Galway minus one.
It's Mayo minus one.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Right.
That's ridiculous.
God, I don't know. Does the championship need Mayo to get through? And does the championship need Galway to go away and reinvent themselves this year? I think the neutrals should be shouting for Mayo this week.
Jeez, I thought Galway would be favourites.
It'd be interesting. Yeah. Whoever loses, it's the end for somebody. I think if Galway lose this game, it's definitely the end for Ken Walsh, and it opens the door for a whole host of people, actually. Similarly, I think same thing for true for Mayo. I think there's only maybe two or three players who've shown enough frailties this year that there's hint that it might be close to the end. I certainly don't think there'll be a mass exodus because they're still playing. A lot of these players are still playing to elite level, but I think there is definitely one or two who could be looking down the barrel if this comes to an end on Saturday. Final game on Saturday, Cork and Laois. What's the handicap?
This is one where Cork, we've talked about this with the Munster final before, where historic, Cork did play well obviously against Kerry, and they left me with egg on my face when I was
beating
the handicap.
Except for me, I was accused of Yerism and...
Yeah, true.
Cute horrorism.
It was that though. You didn't. You were just yerring into an accidental prediction.
I still think this is going to be very close, and that Laois have every chance of beating them. But Cork are probably going to be stronger favourites than they should be. So I'm going to say Cork minus three.
Hmm. Where is this game?
This game is on in.
It's in.
Thurles?
Thurles, yes.
Right. I agree with you. I think that Laois seem to have kind of gained a little bit of form as the year's gone on, haven't they? And they've been impressive. They've won by kind of 6 or 7 points in their two qualifier matches. And I think, yeah, I think two people will probably make too much of the Munster final, which was something that Cork had set themselves up for. They didn't want to embarrass themselves. They knew there was going to be a small crowd at home.
Ah, to be fair, like, I'm not saying Cork aren't like decent. It's just that, like, historically, you know, going on the form so far this year, and Laois getting to a league final, coming off the back of a couple of wins,
yeah,
that they should be closer. But I think Cork.
Yeah. What did you say? Minus three.
Yeah.
Jeez, I think that's a good guess. I think a fairer spread is Cork minus two, but my worry is it's higher. So should I go with what's fair, or should I go with what I think the public are backing? Also, Cork could be a public team as well. A lot of people in Cork. Oh, I'll go Cork minus two. I'll have to go with what I think it should be.
Bang on, minus two.
Is it?
Yeah.
I probably would have went minus three now, I have to say, yeah. So.
I was trying to talk you nearly into going higher than me, is it? Yeah.
That's 4-2 there. The only quick thing in this, we do have a team for Laois. I would love to see Laois start as they've named. I don't know if they will, but we talked a lot about their thing about sacrificing a forward to work in an Athletic Bear, but for this game, Laois have started Bo Kingston and Ross Munley, 36-year-old Ross Munley. So none of them, they're all proven attackers, probably won't do the dog work on the other side. But maybe they get away with that against a team like Cork, who were pretty defensively inclined against Kerry. I don't know if they will, but I'd love to see that team start and see what happens. Like, I think this is a game, like, Laois should be allowed to treat this game as a free shot. It's their second year in a row getting to a round four qualifier. There shouldn't be any pressure on a team who John Sucre took over when they were a Division 4 team, and they're now in the Final 12 for 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
after,
and up to Division 2 next year as well, then, yeah.
So back-to-back promotion as well. I think this game should be treated as, is a free shot, and should be treated as such, so I'd love to see them go for that.
I have to say, seeing, having a 36-year-old Ross Munley and a 36-year-old Conal Keeney play in the Championship in this late in the year on the same weekend is class. They would have played against each other.
Yeah.
You know,
it's 2003, 15 years,
16 years ago.
Brian Bean and McDonald was around. Yeah.
Right, the final game, the one that Mick has been most keen to talk about, Meath and Clare, Mick.
Have I? Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those ones where I came in here, there's a lot of Meath people in the office, and I was in the car on the way to work when the draw was on Morning Ireland, and obviously Cork got Laois as the first draw, and then the second draw was Meath, and I absolutely wanted it. I went yes when it was drawn out as Meath and Clare, not necessarily thinking that Clare were going to beat Meath or anything like that, but knowing that I'd prefer them than Cavan or Galway. And when I got into the office, then all the Meath people had been celebrating as well, that they got the soft touch of the draw, and I don't think anybody's wrong. I think that if I was Meath, I probably would have wanted Clare or Laois, but, you know, by the time they came. But at the same time, Clare would be delighted with this draw. And I think that they have a huge chance. I think what would worry me now is that Meath have had their number the last 2 years in the league. And Clare were in really, really good form playing them last year, especially, and went out and got well, well beaten. I think they were beaten by 12 points or something like that. So there's a bit of that. I'm interested to see how Meath react after what happened in the Leinster final, everything that happened after the match. The way they just absolutely didn't show up as a forward line, the way all their good work that they did has been massively undermined by the rest of their performance. So it's almost a test of McEntee to see whether he can take the good stuff and move on, or whether they have collapsed into themselves, which there's always a possibility of. Meanwhile, Clare are just tagging along, having a very good year, have probably reached their level at this stage, and if they go out and perform, they'll just want to do enough that they're in with a chance when the game comes down to it. So Meath are absolutely favourites, and rightly so, but I think we've a huge chance.
It's interesting, right? Is it reading Cullen Collins an interview during the week, a great interview in the Echo, and he said that Meath are a team they played against a lot, but they did a huge amount of work in researching them before the league game. So a lot of the stuff that they'll build on will come focused on that. So they have a huge bank of research done on this Meath team already. So they played each other in the league. Clare bet them. Clare lost by 5.
Mm.
If you look at the starting teams from that day, the vast, vast bulk of the, not the Clare team, but the Meath team is the exact same. So, like, Lavelle McGlill started that day. Donal Keown, Brian Menton, Shane McEntee, Killian O'Sullivan, Ethan Devine, McMahon, Derek Compion, Michael Newman, they all played that day. So it's a mad book. So they, like, in a lot of ways, from a Clare perspective, Meath are a sitting target. Like, they know exactly what they're coming up against, which is, like, Galway and Mayo both don't have that luxury. Cork don't really have that luxury in terms that we just talked about, whether or not Laois could change up or not. But Clare do. Clare probably do have that to think that at least they know this is what we need to hit, and it's somewhat of a sitting target.
Yeah, a good manager can exploit that, and I think Colin Collins has proven that he's a good manager over the last couple of years, if nothing else.
Good to see him doing interviews the week before a round four qualifier as well.
Absolutely.
That's encouraging. So,
handicap though.
Yeah.
Do you think though, like, honestly, if I was to put a gun to either of your heads, like, I'm right in saying that this is a good draw for both teams. Like,
oh yeah,
but
definitely.
But Clare do have, like, we don't know, like, Meath are definitely a little bit overrated by their promotion in the league this year. And I thought we saw against Dublin where they, like, that they still have a huge way to go. Like, they're not, neither of these teams are probably true Super 8 teams. One of them will make it. But I think Meath, you know, they put a couple of good performances together, and then because they're a traditional county, I think people were very quick to elevate them back into the top tier.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure they're there.
Like, it probably is better draw for Clare than it had gotten Cork, because Cork have that kind of just historical, like, how many times have we gone, oh yeah, I'm sure Cork or Tipperary, or Clare or Tipperary this year, whoever they draw, if they draw Cork last few years, like, oh yeah, they'll be Cork.
Yeah, you'd be almost then, like, oh, Cork are like third favourites, and then Cork will always beat them.
But handicap wise, Meath are going to be favourites, probably a little overrated favourites as well. Meath -2.
I got -3.
-2 is bang on. 4-4, lads.
4-4. Jesus, we've got everyone nailed on as well.
Yeah.
Right, we're going over to hurling. Games that shouldn't be on this week, and it's very unfair that they are. As we said a lot on this podcast. Cork and Westmeath.
Guess the handicap, playing 6 days after you've lost a done the final.
Yeah. So this is Cork and Westmeath. I think this is going to be huge. I think Cork, like, I think, knowing John Myler, I think he'll definitely play the squad a little bit this week. But, you know, like, you know, you'll see the likes of O'Malley and Kingston and all,
again,
and Lahan and all those guys who have been coming off the bench like a house on fire. They'll all start, and the opposite will happen, especially in the forwards. So I think that actually is worse news for Westmeath. In a way, you know, they might like leave Horgan off or whoever, and these guys will be looking for that one place or that first sub place maybe when they come up against Kilkenny. Very hard for Westmeath to lift themselves. Disappointing year, disappointing final. I can't see this being under 12. Cork -14.
I have -16 in mind, but I'm going to be Johnny Conservative and just go Cork -15.
Oh, wow.
15.
Bang on.
Yes.
Damn it. God, I wasn't far off.
Right.
When you get bang on the -15, the world's just working against you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or when the other person gets -15, yeah.
The other game, I think it's fair to say it'll be more competitive, Dublin and Laois. Again, you'd really fancy Laois to give them a right rattle if they'd been given 2 weeks break after celebrating a John McDonough, but they aren't. They're given a quick turnaround again, which is totally unfair. What's the spread, lads?
While he's thinking of that, it's easy to forget, one, that Dublin, you know, Dublin are still, it's like what I was saying about Meath almost being overrated. Dublin are almost underrated by people thinking they're not traditionally good.
Yeah.
They forget that they've just beaten Galway in the last game. They should have beaten Wexford, and they could have beaten Kilkenny. And that's probably the best way to describe their season so far. Very, very good form, very good team. So it's easy to kind of assume that Laois will give them a good game, but I'm not so sure that's the case. I hope it is, but I'm not so sure.
I had, this is the thing, you've taught me into changing my mind.
I could be giving analysis here for the country, or I could be literally just trying to win this game or get to a playoff. It's my only chance.
So I'm going to go with Dublin -12. That was my initial thought, and Mick taught me into thinking that maybe it's going to be a bit more, but I'm going to stick with 12.
Okay, I think it's less than that. Dublin -10.
It's -8.
Still no, so Mark still wins.
So, yeah, you're...
Oh, no!
6-5.
6-5. After winning a thriller last week, I lost one this week.
Eddie Brennan,
miles off of the last one, but the rest.
Eddie Brennan was chatting after the John McDonough to RTE and said, I think he's managed this really well. He let the Laois team go out and celebrate on Sunday, as he rightly should. And then on Monday, they took it easy, and instead they like took it easy, a few beers, whatever, but watched the game back from the Sunday. So used that night kind of proactively, and then went and trained Tuesday. So given the horrible condition he's in, I think that's the best possible way of managing a turnaround like that. And it's also nice of him, and like, he's, I know we've had him on the show, but he's to be open about that kind of stuff as well, I think is really encouraging. Like, I like the, I think, by the way, final point on all this stuff, the way it's going with managers being a lot more open now and the quality of GAA journalism right now. Like, we just mentioned Eamon Donoghue. Cathal O'Kane wrote an article with Tyrone that I didn't get to bring up today, but it was brilliant. Our own PJ, like the stuff PJ did with the Dublin Miners or the concussion, really, he did a thing with Alan Callaghan last week, which was great as well. Like, the stuff has never been as better. I think the tide is turning, and we're set for years and years of positivity with the GAA, lads.
Well, like, in terms of that, I definitely think that there was a lot of people, I saw a lot of people down at the golf last, you know, talking about, like, having a much easier time talking to people on the week of games. Like, the, you know, I saw them, like, oh, it's like the old days again. Michael Foley, I think it was, with one of them, you know, these kind of lads. And, like, why not? Nobody's out to get them.
Exactly.
No, and if you don't say something stupid, there's nothing, like, people aren't out to get you. If you say something stupid, they'll write about it, you know. So yeah.
Isn't it brilliant? That brand, you know. Those players got to
Well, sure, look, if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do.
Right, there it is. The boom is back. Enjoy the games this weekend, and we'll chat to you on Monday, where we'll review all of this. In the meantime, take it easy.
Nanda Banner.